Shalom and welcome to Rambam Yomi. This is Rabbi Mati Novik. Join me as we learn the Rambam's Mishneh Torah, one perek each day.
Today we'll be learning Hilchot Lulav, perek Chet. This second and final perek of Hilchot Lulav is mostly devoted to the various disqualifications of the Dalet Minim. Many of these relate to physical appearance, like the existence of a blemish, or if some part of the min is dried out or cut off. And these vary from one min to another. Some disqualifications relate to halachic properties of the min, including who owns it and whether it may be eaten. We note that this is a very extensive topic in the halachic literature, and our focus will be on the words and rulings of the Rambam, as well as their broader ramifications. The last third of the perek discusses the unique simcha of Sukkot as expressed in the Simchat Beit HaShoevah celebration. The relationship of this simcha to the mitzvah of lulav, which is the main topic of these two prakim, is a point which we will attempt to understand. Halacha Aleph. Arba'at minin elu, shehein lulav v'hadas v'arava v'etrog, shehaya echad mehen yavesh o gazul o ganuv, afilu lachar yeush, o shehaya me'asherah hane'evedet, af api shebitlu ha'asherah mila ovda, o shehaya shel ir hanidachat, harei ze pasul. Haya echad mehen shel avodah zara, lo yitol l'chatchila, v'im natal yatza. Haya kamush v'lo gamar livash kasher, ubishat adchak, ubishat asakana, lulav hayavesh kasher, avalo sha'ar haminin. This halacha discusses three psulim, and we will address them one at a time. The first is yavesh, dried out. The Gemara learns this disqualification from the word hadar, meaning beautiful, in the term pre-Eitz Hadar, used to denote the etrog, and applies this requirement of hadar to all four minim. The end of the halacha says that this psul only applies if the min is completely dried out, not kamush, wilting. What is the physical indicator of being dried out? The Shulchan Aruch rules that when the lulav, hadas, or arava is no longer green and its color begins to whiten, the min is pasul. The Rama is more lenient and disqualifies these minim only when their leaves are brittle enough that they can be broken with the fingernails. The Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan reject the leniency of the Rama, except in a case where there is no alternative. The Rambam writes at the end of the halacha that in a time of great urgency or danger, shat adchak and shat sakana, a lulav may be used even if it is dried out, but not the other minim. He gets this from a statement of Rabbi Yehuda in the Gemara, that in the city of Karkum, lulavim were handed down from one generation to the next, meaning that the same lulav was used many years in a row. And the Gemara explains that this was done only during a shat adchak. The Ravid, in his Hasaga here, rejects the Rambam's leniency, as the Mishnah calls a dried-out lulav pasul, and pasul always means invalid, even b'dieved. What happened in the city of Karkum was that because kosher lulavim were completely unavailable for an extended time, the people of the city used very old lulavim without a bracha, just so the mitzvah wouldn't be forgotten, but not as a fulfillment of the mitzvah. The Shulchan Aruch accepts the stringency of the Ravid, but the Rama quotes the custom to follow the Rambam in a Shat Adchak. We'll see again later in the Perek a situation where the Ravid is more machmir about dried-out minim than the Rambam. The second disqualification in this halacha is a min which is stolen, gazul o ganuv. This is part of a more general din we'll see in halacha yud, that a min must belong to the person using it. Under what circumstances does a thief gain ownership of a stolen min, meaning he keeps it and must pay back money in its place, and therefore he can use it? The Rambam writes here that yeush, despair on the part of the original owner of retrieving his lost object, is not enough. But a shinui in the object is capable of transferring ownership, and the Shulchan Aruch brings two examples. If the thief physically embellishes the lulav, like by smoothing the leaves, then this is a shinui ma'aseh, and he can be yotzei the mitzvah with the lulav. If the owner has given up on getting the lulav back, and the thief gives it or sells it to someone else, then the combination of yeush and shinui reshut means that the recipient gains ownership and can be yotzei with this lulav. The third psul in this halacha is using a min of avodah zarah. Here, the Rambam says three things, two of which are familiar to us from the beginning of Hilchot Shofar. If one of the minim comes from the property of an ir anidachat, then it is pasul, based on the principle of ketute michtat shiure. Anything which must be burnt is considered to lack a halachic shir. And we saw in the last perek that each of the dalet minim has a shir of length or size. If one of the dalet minim belongs to some avodah zarah, then it may not be used lechatchila, but b'dieved one is yotzei with it. As we explained in Hilchot Shofar, This seems to be a case where the min belongs to a non-Jew, who can be mevatel its avodah zara status. If it belongs to a Jew who cannot perform bittul, then this is no different from the first case of an irani dachat, and the min is pasul due to ketute mechtat shiure. The third statement of the Rambam refers specifically to lulav and is somewhat surprising. If the lulav comes from an asherah, a tree which was planted as a form of avodah zara, then it is pasul even after the asherah has undergone bittul. Why is this lulav pasul? How is this different from the second case of a min of avodah zara, which we explained is kasher b'dieved due to the possibility of bittul, and is certainly kasher after bittul? The Nosei Kalim here explain that the asherah is uniquely abhorrent, because it was planted and came into existence specifically for the purpose of being worshipped. Unlike other forms of avodah zara, which become either the property of avodah zara, or are themselves worshipped after they already exist in some form. Therefore, even after bittul, the lulav which comes from an asherah is forever off-limits to use for the mitzvah of dalad minim. Halacha bet. Etrog shel orla v'shel trumat meya v'shel tevel, pasul. Shel demai kasher, she'efshar she'afkir nechasav v'ye'ani, she'mutar lo lechol demai. Etrog shel trumat tohora v'shel maser sheni b'Yerushalayim, lo yitol, she'mayach shiro l'tuma, v'imnatal kasher. An etrog which it is forbidden to eat is pasul. The Rambam explains in his Perush HaMishnayot that this is because the etrog is called a pri in the pasuk, pri etz hadar, and only a fruit which is fit for consumption qualifies as a pri. So an etrog which is orla, it came from a tree which is still in its first 3 years, or tevel, untithed produce, or truma tmeya, which even kohanim may not eat, is pasul. If the etrog is demai, then it may be used, because demai is permitted to aniyim, as we've explained in the past. It's interesting to note that the Rambam adds here a line, in which he points out that the one who wishes to use an etrog of demai can in theory relinquish all of his property and become an ani, who is permitted to eat demai. The Rambam seems to hold that it isn't enough that the etrog be permitted to someone. Rather, it must be permitted, at least in theory, to the person who wishes to use it. This has a big nafkamina for the case at the end of the halacha of an etrog of truma tehora. If our understanding of the Rambam is correct, then this is permitted only to a kohen, not to a Yisrael. This is a machloket rishonim. The Ran agrees with this opinion, but Rashi and Tosfot hold that even a non-kohen may use an etrog of truma. Whoever may use the etrog of truma tehora, the halacha ends with a statement that this may not be done lechatchila, due to a concern that it will be picked up with wet hands. Recall that once a fruit like an etrog becomes wet, it is now capable of being mekabel tuma, and truma tameya may not be eaten. An etrog of maser sheni may not be used lechatchila for the same reason. Halacha gimel. Lulav shniktam rosho pasul. Nistak, im nidrachku shnei sdakav zemize ad shirau kishnaim, pasul. Haya akom lefanav, sharei shidro kegav balei hatoret, pasul. Haya akom leacharav, kasher, shezohi briato. Nekam leechad mishnei tzadav, pasul. Nifredu alav zeme al ze, veloni daldelu kalei achariot, kasher. Nifritzu vuhushi daldelu mishidro shelulav kalei achariot, pasul. If the top end of the upper leaf of the lulav is cut off, then the lulav is pasul. If that upper leaf is split in two, and the two ends are visibly separated from one another, so that the leaf resembles two leaves, then the lulav is pasul. Recall that the spine of the lulav is located on one side of the branch. We typically hold a lulav with the spine facing the front. If the lulav is bent and forms an arch, the din depends on the direction of the bending. If the spine is located on the inside of the arch, meaning if the lulav were held in the usual manner, then it would bend toward the person holding it, then the lulav is valid, as this is the usual manner in which a lulav grows. But if the spine is located on the outside of the arch, this is considered an abnormal deformity, and the lulav is pasul. The same is true if the spine bends towards one of the sides, right or left, when it is held with a spine in front. Recall from Perek Zion that the lulav is meant to be a branch in its early stages, before the leaves begin to separate and hang outward. If the leaves have clearly begun to separate, but do not yet hang off with the ends pointing downward, then the lulav is still kasher. But once the leaves begin to point downward, the lulav is pasul. Halacha dalet. Briyat alin shelulav kachi. Kishehem gedelin, gedelin shnayim shnayim, udvukin migaban. Vegav kol shnei alin hadvukin hu hanikra tiomet. Nechleka tiomet pasul. Each leaf of a lulav really consists of two leaves joined at one end. The end where the two parts of a leaf are joined is called a tiomet. The Rambam writes that if the tiomet is split, then the lulav is pasul. But since he just wrote that every leaf has its own tiomet, it is unclear what exactly disqualifies the lulav. If every tiomet is split, or most of them, or even one of them? The Magen Mishnah understands the Rambam to mean that most of the leaves must be split at the tiomet in order to invalidate the lulav. The Shulchan Aruch accepts this view and adds that each leaf must be split most of the way down the leaf for the lulav to be pasul. But the Ramah accepts the more stringent opinion of several Rishonim that even if just the tiomet of the middle leaf is split, that is, the upper leaf just above the spine of the lulav, then the lulav is pasul. Even according to this view, the lulav is pasul only if the tiomet of the middle leaf is split most of the way down. Though recall from the last halacha that if the middle leaf is split in such a way that the two sides are visibly separated and look like two leaves, then the lulav is pasul even if only a small part of the leaf is split. The halacha ends with two cases of a lulav which is pasul because its leaves don't grow normally. Either each leaf is only a single unit with no tiomet at all, or the leaves are very short and leave a portion of the spine of the lulav entirely uncovered by leaves. Halacha Hey begins with the words, Hadas shiniktam rosho kasher. If the top end of a hadas is cut off, the hadas is still valid. In Halacha Vav, the Rambam says the same thing about an arava. These are in stark contrast to the lulav, which we saw in Halacha Gimel is pasul if its end is cut off. There are two Mishnayot in Masechet Sukkah which seem to contradict each other about a hadas whose end is cut off. One said it is pasul, but the other quotes the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon that one may use three hadasim ketumim, hadasim with their ends cut off, and the Gemara concludes that halacha follows the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon. Based on this conclusion, the Gaonim reject the earlier Mishnah and allow a hadas shniktam rosho, and this is the psak of the Rambam as well. The Ravid in his Hasaga here references, without going into any detail, a novel resolution which he wrote elsewhere to the contradiction between the two Mishnayot. He writes, Kvar hofia ruach hakodesh bevet midrashenu, seemingly attributing his resolution of the difficulty to divine inspiration. His conclusion is that Rabbi Tarfon meant something else, and a hadas, like a lulav, is pasul if its end is cut off. But the Magen Mishnah writes that the Ramban read the Ravid's interpretation of the Mishnayot and wasn't convinced, and he accepted the view of the Gaonim like the Rambam did. The Shulchan Aruch accepts the lenient opinion of the Rambam and brings the Ravid's stringent view as a Yesh Omrim. Another Mishnah records that an Arava is Psula if its end is cut off, but the Rambam, who validates such an Arava in Halacha Vav, as we said, evidently believes that Hadas and Arava share the same din. Just as the earlier Mishnah about Hadas is rejected, so too the Mishnah about Arava is rejected. The Ravid on Halacha Vav agrees that Hadas and Arava share the same din, but for him, this means that both are pasul, as here in Halacha Hey, he invalidates the Hadas Shiniktam Rosho. The Magen Mishnah writes in the name of the Ramban that there is a reason to distinguish between Hadas and Arava. The beauty of the hadas lies in its extensive leafy covering along the entire length of its branch. This is unaffected by the cutting off of the top end, and therefore the hadas shniktam rosho remains valid. But the beauty of the arava and of the lulav depend on the physical appearance of the branch itself, and when the top end is cut off, this is a very prominent blemish which invalidates those minim. The Shulchan Aruch accepts the majority view against the Rambam that an arava shniktam rosha is psula. Continuing in Halacha Hey, nashru rov alav im nishtaru shlosha alim beken echad kasher. This line, which comes from a bright and Masechet Sukkah, speaks of a case where many leaves fall off the hadas branch and the hadas remains valid. But there are two radically different understandings of what the line means. The Tur accepts the simplest meaning, which is very lenient. As long as there remains on the branch of the hadas, shlosha alin beken echad, one bud from which all three leaves emerge and are still attached, the hadas is valid. The Magen Mishnah reads this line entirely differently. There must remain three leaves attached to every bud, and the hadas is valid even if there were many more leaves to begin with, like seven leaves emerging from each bud, and most of the leaves fell off, four out of every seven. The Shulchan Aruch quotes the same words that appear in this halacha without elaborating, and the Mishnah Berurah quotes the explanation of the Magen Mishnah. Continuing in Halacha Hey, Hayu anavav merubot me'alav, im yirukot, kasher. Vim hayu adumot o shchorot, pasul. Vim miyatan, kasher. Ve'en matinotan biyontov, lefi shukim etaken. Avar v'liktan, o shliktan, acher la'achila, hare ze kasher. I read the last words according to the girsa of the Magen Mishnah in the Rambam, but there is another girsa and we'll explain in a moment. If the hadas branch has more berries than leaves on it, but the berries are still green and unripe, then the hadas is kasher. If the berries are red or black, then the hadas is pasul, but it can be rehabilitated by taking off enough berries that they are outnumbered by the leaves. This must be done before Yom Tov, not on Yom Tov itself, because fixing the hadas by removing the excess berries resembles an act of tikkun kli, which is forbidden on Yom Tov. Even if one removes the berries for the purpose of eating them, not in order to fix the hadas, the Gemara says that this doesn't qualify as a davar sheino mitkaven, because it is an example of a psik reshe. The tikkun of the hadas is an inevitable result of the removal of the berries, so it doesn't matter what the intent was. Hence, the Rambam ends this halacha by writing that someone else may pick the berries to eat them, liktan acher l'achila, that is, another person who won't be using this hadas, and for him, this isn't tikkun kli at all. And so his act of picking the berries is not a psik reshe. Many printed versions of the Rambam have the words liktan echad echad l'achila. He, the owner of the hadas, picks the berries one at a time in order to eat them. But the Nosei Kelim have difficulty with this girsa, as why should picking them one at a time make any difference? It is still a psik reshe, unless he doesn't need to use the hadas, either because he has another one, that's our girsa in the Gemara, or because he isn't the owner of this hadas at all. Therefore, the girsa of the Magen Mishnah of liktan acher l'achila seems to make much more sense. Halacha Zayin. Etrog shenikav nekev mifulash kolshehu pasul. V'nekev sheno mifulash im haya kisar o yater pasul. Chasar kolshehu pasul. The Rambam lists here three cases in which an etrog is pasul. If there is a hole of any size which goes from one side to the other, if there is a large hole, the size of a small coin, even if it doesn't go all the way to the other side, and if even a small piece of the flesh of the etrog is removed. It sounds like the first two cases of holes invalidate the etrog even if none of the flesh is missing. The Raivid disagrees and believes that only a hole which removes some portion of the etrog invalidates it. This can be a minimal amount if the hole goes from one side to the other, and must be larger if the hole doesn't go to the other side. But if there is only a hole with nothing missing, like for example if someone sticks a needle into an etrog, even going all the way to the other side, then the Raivid believes that the etrog is still kasher. The Shulchan Aruch accepts the more stringent view of the Rambam, but quotes the Raivid as a Yesh Omrim, and the Rama allows relying on this leniency bishat hadchak. The Rama also writes that holes which are caused by thorns on the tree don't invalidate an etrog, as these are considered part of the normal manner in which an etrog grows. One final note about the more stringent nekev mifulash. We have interpreted this phrase to refer to a hole which goes from one side of the etrog all the way to the other. But the Shulchan Aruch quotes an opinion of several Rishonim that even a hole which gets only to the middle of the etrog, where the seeds are located, qualifies as mifulash. Continuing in Halacha Zayin, Nital dado, v'hu ha-rosh ha-katan sheshoshan tobo, pasul. Nital ha-eitz shu talui bo ba'ilan, meikar ha-etrog, v'nishar mekomo guma, pasul. The two ends of the etrog are familiar to us as the pitam on top and the oketz, or stem, on the bottom, where the etrog was attached to the tree. The pitam actually consists of two parts, the shoshanta, which is the light brown circular tip of the pitam, and the dad, which is the same color as the etrog itself and connects the shoshanta to the body of the etrog. Many people are of the mistaken impression that even if just the shoshanta falls off, then the etrog is pasul. The Rama indeed quotes a chumra to that effect, but he admits that the etrog is only invalidated if the entire dad falls off, as the Rambam writes here. As long as the portion of the dad which remains attached covers the entire body of the etrog below the dad, the etrog is still valid. Similarly, if the oketz falls off at the bottom of the etrog, this invalidates the etrog only if it creates a hole in the body of the etrog. The Rama writes that an etrog which grew without a pitam is entirely kasher. Continuing in Halacha Zayin, Alat Chazazit Alav, אם בשניים ושלושה מקומות, פסול. ואם במקום אחד, אם עלת על רובו, פסול. ואם עלת על דדו, אפילו כלשהו, פסול. The Rambam records three situations of chazazit, a lesion or growth, in which the etrog is pusil. If these appear on multiple spots on the surface of the etrog, if there is only one chazazit, but it covers the majority of the etrog, or if there is only one and it is on the dad, the stem we mentioned earlier, which is the lower part of the pitam, below the shoshanta. We won't elaborate here on the many opinions among poskim about chazazit, but we briefly mention three relevant issues. 1. What exactly qualifies as a chazazit? The consensus among poskim is that only a lesion or blister coming from the etrog itself is considered a chazazit, and not markings which are caused by something external, like bletlach, which result from leaves rubbing against the surface of the etrog. 2. What qualifies as multiple spots over the surface of the etrog? How much of the surface of the etrog these need to cover? And is the amount of area between them relevant to this psul? We won't get into the many opinions about those questions. Finally, while the Rambam is machmir about a single small chazazit only if it is on the dad, other Rishonim believe that such a chazazit invalidates the etrog if it is located anywhere in the upper portion of the etrog, which slopes towards the top, and the Shulchan Aruch accepts this stringency. The rest of Halacha Zayin and Halacha Chet list several disqualifications of the etrog which are very uncommon, including the removal of the outer peel or if the etrog has a strange color. An etrog is invalid if it is dark green, like a leek, karti. The Shulchan Aruch writes that this is only possible if the etrog will not become lighter over time. But if it is known that the color will lighten, then the etrog is kosher even while it is very green. This completes the list of specific psulim, which began at the beginning of the perek. Halacha Tet establishes an important distinction between the psulim which apply only on the first day and those which apply every day. Kol elu shamarnu shem psulim mipnei mumin shebi'arnu o mipnei gazel ugneva biyom tov rishon bilvad, aval biyom tov sheni im sha'ar hayamim hakol kasher. והפסלנות שהיא משום עבודה זרה, או מפני שאותו אתרוג אסור באכילה, בין ביום טוב ראשון, בין בשאר הימים, פסול. The psulim, which are due to physical blemishes in the minim, as well as that of a stolen min, apply only on the first day. Why? Recall that the pasuk about taking the dalad minim begins with the words, ולקחתם לכם ביום הראשון. The requirement that the minim belong to the one taking them, and aren't stolen, or even borrowed, as we'll see in Halacha Yud, is learned from the word lachem. Since this word refers specifically to the mitzvah on the first day, the requirement of ownership is limited to the first day. Most or all of the psulim due to physical blemishes derive from the word hadar, beautiful, in the description of the etrog as a pre-etz hadar, and the Rambam believes that the requirement of hadar, too, is limited to the first day. Other Rishonim disagree, and believe that Hadar applies throughout the holiday. In contrast to these, there are two psulim which the Rambam believes are relevant even after the first day. A min from an iranidachat has no shiur, based on the principle of ketute michdat shiure, and if an etrog is forbidden to eat, then it doesn't meet the criteria of a pri. Both of these are fundamental requirements of the minim, which apply on every day of the holiday. The Ravid adds two more psulim to the Rambam's short list, which apply every day. The psul of Yavesh, a dried-out min, is not based on Hadar, according to the Ravid, but is more fundamental. The Yerushalmi learns that a desiccated min is akin to a corpse, and therefore is invalid for the mitzvah of Lulav, based on the pasuk of Lo Hameitim Yahaluka, the dead cannot praise Hashem. We'll return soon to the deeper meaning of this Yerushalmi. In any event, the Ravid learns from it that the psul of Yavesh applies every day of the holiday. In addition, claims the Ravid, a stolen min is pasul not only because the thief doesn't own it, but because of a more general disqualification of mitzvah habah b'avera, which isn't limited to the first day. The Rambam's position on mitzvah habah b'avera isn't entirely clear, but he doesn't mention it in this perek, and several nosei kelim, including the Kesef Mishnah, believe that he doesn't apply it to the dalad minim at all. There is a fascinating machloket Rishonim about the difference between the first day and the rest of the holiday. When we speak about taking the dalad minim after the first day, we can mean two different things. Nowadays, as we saw in the last perek, the mitzvah to take the dalad minim after the first day is entirely midrabbanan, as a form of zecher lemikdash. But at the time of the Beit HaMikdash, there was a mitzvah d'oraita, to take the Dalet Minim in the Mikdash all 7 days. The Rambam here doesn't distinguish between these two. Even when there is a mitzvah d'oraita to take Dalet Minim all 7 days in the Mikdash, the psulim relating to blemishes and ownership didn't apply after the first day. Other Rishonim, including Rashi and Tosfot, disagree. They believe that the leniency of the last 6 days relative to the first day is entirely due to the fact that the chiv on these days is midirabbanan, that is, nowadays. When the chiv is d'oraita, as in the Mikdash, then all the psulim of the first day apply in the last 6 days as well. Rav Soloveitchik explains that the root of this machloket is how to understand the relationship between the two parts of the mitzvah d'oraita of Dalet Minim. The chiyuv everywhere on the first day, learned from Ulakachtem Lachem Bayom HaRishon, and the chiyuv in the Mikdash on the remaining days, learned from Usmachtem Lifnei Hashem Elokechem Shivat Yamim. Rashi and Tosfot believe that the second mitzvah is not an independent one. The term Usmachtem simply extends the mitzvah of Ulakachtem, which exists everywhere on the first day, to continue for 7 days in the Beit HaMikdash. Therefore, all psulim which are relevant on the first day apply equally in the Mikdash for all 7 days. But the Rambam evidently understands otherwise, that these are two completely separate mitzvot, ulakachtem everywhere on the first day, and usmachtem in the Mikdash all 7 days. These two mitzvot can have entirely different parameters, and so there is no reason to apply the psulim learned from ulakachtem lachem to the subsequent days, even in the Mikdash. What emerges from the Rambam's understanding is that Usmachtem is an independent commandment of Lulav, indicating that taking the Lulav is inherently an act of Simcha. We'll elaborate on this point shortly when we get to the final part of the Perek about the special Simcha of Sukkot and the way this was expressed in the Beit HaMikdash. Halacha Yud. Ein Adam Yotzei B'Yom Tov Rishon Shel Chag B'Lulavo Shel Chaviro Sheish Alenu Mimenu Ad Sheitnenu Lo Matana Nitanolo almanat lachziro, hareze yotsebo de chavato umachziro, shematana almanat lachzir, shema matana. Vimlo hechziro, lo yatsa, shnimsa ki gazul, ve einot ninoto le katan, shakatan kone ve inomakne lachiri minatora, vimsa shim hechziro lo, eino choser, ve had halulav, ve had kol min vamin me arbaat minin shabo, im haya echad mehen shaul, ein yotsinbo biyom tov rishon. We saw in Halacha Aleph that one isn't yotzei with a stolen lulav, and this was clarified in the last halacha to refer to the first day only, because of the requirement of lachem. One can only be yotzei with a set of a dalet minim which belongs entirely to him. For the same reason, Ruvein may not borrow Shimon's set of dalet minim in order to use them for the mitzvah, though Shimon can give Ruvein his set as a matana almanat lahachzir. In this case, the gift is valid only if it is ultimately returned, because that was a condition of the gift. If it isn't returned, then it was never a gift in the first place, and so Reuven was not yotzei, because he used a set of dalet minim which was not his. One must be careful not to give his set of dalet minim to a child before he himself performs the mitzvah with them, because midoraita, a child is capable of assuming ownership, but not of relinquishing ownership. So if one gives his dalet minim to a child, he will lose ownership of them indefinitely. Halacha Yud Aleph addresses the case of partners who jointly own any of the dalet minim, or all of them. In order for any of these partners to be yotzei, the others must give him their shares so that he can be the sole owner while he does the mitzvah. While nowadays it is a relatively easy matter to purchase dalet minim, this was not always the case, and it was common in pre-war Europe for a community to acquire a single set of dalet minim for all of its members to use. All members of the community would be considered joint owners of the set, with the implicit assumption that when each person takes it in order to fulfill a mitzvah, the others relinquish to him their shares of ownership, so that he is the sole owner for that couple of minutes. In this manner, there does not need to be a separate act of kinyan each time the set is used. Even though this was a common practice, Achronim, including the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan, recommend avoiding it wherever possible. Whenever a set of dalet minim is shared by multiple owners, all should explicitly be makne their shares to the one who wishes to use it at any given time. Halacha Yud Bet. Af al pi shekol ha-moadot mitzvah lismoch mehem, בחג הסוכות הייתה שם במקדש שמחה יתרה, שנאמר, ושמחתם לפני השם לוקחם שבעת ימים. וכיצד היו עושים? Erev Yom Tov HaRishon hayu mitaknin b'mikdash makom lanashim milamala v'lanashim milamata kedei shelo yitarvu eluim elu u'matchilin lismoach miyotzei Yom Tov HaRishon v'chein b'chol yom v'yom yimei cholo shomoed matchilin me'achar shiakrivu tamid shel ben harbayim lismoach sh'ar hayom im kol halayla. Even though there is a mitzvah of simcha on every Yom Tov, as we saw in Hilchot Yom Tov Perek Vav, there was an especially great simcha in the Beit HaMikdash on Sukkot, based on the pasuk of Usmachtem Lifnei Hashem Elokechem Shivat Yamim. There was a celebration in the Mikdash, both on Motzai Yom Tov and on every weekday of Chol HaMoed, beginning after the last korban was offered in the afternoon, the Tamid Shel Ben Harbayim, and continuing through the night. This was known as the Simchat Beit HaShoiva, and the Rambam describes the details of it in the coming halachot. A mechitza would be set up to separate men and women. There would be singing, musical instruments, dancing, and words of praise for Hashem and for the Beit HaMikdash. The most active participants, especially in the very energetic dancing and clapping, would be the Chachamim, Tzadikim, and the heads of the Yeshivot and of the Sanhedrin. Most of the other, less prominent attendees came primarily to watch and to listen. It is no coincidence that the Rambam speaks about the Simchat Beit HaShoiva in Hilchot Lulav, even though this has nothing to do with the Dalet Minim, and Rav Soloveitchik learns from here a fundamental idea about the mitzvah of Lulav. We start with a question. How can the Rambam say in Halacha Yud Bet that the Pasuk of Usmachtem is a source for the celebration of Simchat Beit HaShoiva? Isn't this Pasuk the source for the mitzvah of taking Lulav 7 days in the Beit HaMikdash? And recall from what we said in Halacha Tet, that Usmachtem for the Rambam is not a generic term which simply extends the mitzvah Ulkachtem Lachem for another 6 days, like for other Rishonim, but a separate command relating specifically to taking the Lulav in the Mikdash. So how can the word mean two different things? The answer, explains Rav Soloveitchik, is that these aren't two different things at all. The essence of Lulav is to represent an expression of Simcha. On the holiday of Sukkot, Chag HaAsif, when we celebrate the bounty of the fields, we take these Dalet Minim, the symbols of agricultural plenty, and use them as tools to express our boundless joy to be servants of Hashem. Outside the Mikdash, we must do this on one day. But in the Mikdash, where we stand Lifnei Hashem in the company of the Divine Presence, there is a special mitzvah of Usmachtem Lifnei Hashem Shivat Yamim. Show your joy through the Dalet Minim and through the celebration of Simchat Beit HaShoiva on all 7 days of Sukkot. We saw in the last perek that according to the Rambam, shaking the lulav during Hallel is part of the mitzvah of lulav, and therefore the bracha on lulav should ideally be made just before Hallel. And we saw just a few minutes ago in Halacha Tet that the Ravid disqualifies a dried-out lulav during all of Sukkot based on the pasuk of Lo Hamitim Yahaluka. Both of these opinions express the idea that taking the Dalet Minim is integrally connected to Hallel, a verbal expression of praise of Hashem and the simcha that derives from serving Him. Nitilat lulav is an expression of simcha and therefore belongs to Hallel. Halacha Tet Vav. Hasimcha shiyismach adam ba'asiyat ha-mitzvot uva'avat ha-kel shetziva behem avodah gedolahi v'chol hamoneh atzmo misimcha zo ra'ui li para mimenu shenemar tachat asher lo'avadat Hashem Elokecha b'simcha v'tuv levav v'chol ha-megis da'ato v'cholei kavod la'atzmo u'mitkabed b'einav v'mkot elu chote v'shote v'al zeh yizhir Shlomo v'amar al titadar lifnei melech וכל המשפיל עצמו ומקל גופו במקומות אלו, הוא הגדול המכובד, העובד מאהבה. וכן דוד מלך ישראל אומר, ונקלותי עוד מזאת, והייתי שפל בעיניי, ואין הגדולה והכבוד אלא לסמוח לפני השם, שנאמר, והמלך דוד מפזז ומחרקר לפני השם. The parak closes by describing the importance of expressing simcha in serving Hashem. One who abstains from the simcha is deserving of punishment, and anyone who considers himself too respectable to dance and otherwise express simcha in a physical manner is both foolish and a sinner. On the contrary, he who sets aside his own ideas of dignity and dances exuberantly in expressing his joy and love of Hashem is considered great and honored through this activity. We should all take the example of David HaMelech, who danced in this manner when the Aron Kodesh was being carried in a festive procession to his capital city of Hebron. when his wife Michal reprimanded him for his supposedly undignified behavior, his response was, "Unkaloti od mizot v'hayiti shafal be'inai." I would shame myself even further and become lowly in my own eyes if by doing so I could express even more deeply my love of Hashem and the simcha I feel in being able to serve him.
Thank you for joining me in learning today's parak of the Mishnah Torah. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas you'd like to share, I'd be happy to hear from you. Send me an email at mtorahyomi@gmail.com. That's M as in Mishnah, Torah, T-O-R-A-H, Yomi, Y-O-M-I, @gmail.com. Come back tomorrow as we continue with our next parak.